this is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with The Truth Will Live. Truth Will Live, it is great having you on the show.
Thanks, Robert.
So we're joined here with Alex von Goldstein and Rabbit.
Aloha.
Hey.
We're going to be talking about hipsters. So, Alex, you've kind of from that background yourself.
Yeah. Am I still a hipster?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because being like this is the cool, trendy thing to do.
I remember Rabbit and I did that. We did that kind of that show where we talked about the hipster culture, kind of how it emerged and kind of degenerated into all these other subcultures. I think Rabbit. Do you remember like there were like these three different subcultures and they all just kind of merged together?
Yeah, I mean, basically you had like the indie music sort of people, and then like the, I guess some of the edgier like tattoo types, and then like the, I don't know, like what I always notice is that the, like when I was younger, the hipsters were like kind of like arty and pretentious, and then at a certain point, like it became more like it was hip to be as trashy as possible, and like as stupid. It's kind of like morphed into that.
To wear like an insane clown posse shirt. That was like the height of like being a hipster was wearing like ICP.
What, like ironically?
Yeah, exactly.
But being
ironically trashy, I guess.
You know, like I felt like there was this point where it was like post irony, you know? Where people that were like, I don't know, Pitchfork readers or whatever in like 2006, those people would say like, oh, like Beyonce sucks or whatever, you know, like mainstream stuff sucks. And then, you know, then there was like this sort of moving towards like, hey, but like the production is interesting, or like, wait, it's actually interesting. You know, like, I'm going to listen to Taylor Swift and, like, appreciate the songwriting. It's like, I sort of call that, like, post-irony or something. And it seems like now post-irony has just evolved into, mindlessly appreciating Carly Rae Jepsen. And, like, you know, my friends that are, like, hipster-type people just, like, listen to Carly Rae Jepsen and Beyonce, you know, and then like, you know, like Brand New and other like emo bands they liked in middle school and shit, like, you know, yeah, like the sort of trying to be cool stopped, you know.
Like we talked about that with the Rabbit. It's just you have these different subcultures in the late 90s. You had sort of the original hipsters. You had like the douchebag culture.
What's
and
that?
And then you had the hip hop culture.
What
and
is douchebag culture?
I don't know, I guess, like, in the late 90s, like, something kind of like a Limp Bizkit.
That's
and
awesome.
The cultures have kind of, like, merged together into, like, one culture. And you don't really see, like, as much of a distinctive hipster culture that you see, noticed, like, five years ago.
I don't think douchebag Limp Bizkit culture is part of hipster culture, though. Like,
I think it's Rabbit. Rabbit, you know, you said that.
I don't think that the Limp Bizkit stuff is, but I definitely remember in that era, at least in Phoenix, there were a lot of these like indie kind of like rapcore style bands that were like, that almost kind of were like the early days of like Gauges and like those kind of piercings and stuff where you saw like a merging of like this like indie rapcore stuff, like kind of like the Funk Junkies and those kind of bands that later those cards kind of merged with the artsy, you know, fashionable indie types. I think what you see now, though, is that you see people that are kind of adopting, like, they might be, like, copying, like, the aesthetic of, like, the fashion of some of that, but then when you look into, like, what the stuff they're actually into, like, you know, they may look like they're this pretentious artsy like hipster, but they're watching you know, they're watching like reality TV and the Super Bowl and stuff like that, and they're like, you know, listening to like
they just binge
Beyonce
watch TV shows.
Minaj. Like, so it's like they've adopted some of the like the aesthetic of it, but the core of them, like, they're still just like total normies.
Huh. I have this friend who I'll say his name, Gonzalo, who keeps bugging me to say this on the show, so I'll go out and put out his theory. But he has this theory that the hipster thing came about as a reaction to the Iraq war, the same way that the hippies had their hair long with the Vietnam draft because they wanted to look effeminate to avoid the draft.
That's untrue.
I think it came out as a reaction.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, it was around way before that because, like, I lived in L.A., like, in the late 90s, and, you know, people didn't necessarily use the word hipster as much, but that culture totally existed where, you know, when I lived like on Sunset Boulevard or whatever, you know, we just like dreaded the weekend when all like the normal retards would like jocks and stuff would come up from like Orange County and just totally like totally ruin the vibe.
I remember back in like 99 and 2000, like there were people who kind of fit that category as hipster. But the word, the terminology didn't become, like, widespread until maybe about, like, 2004.
My theory is that I think it was a reaction against, like, hip-hop culture in the late 90s.
Oh.
Or, like, Eminem and that type of thing. Like,
Wigger.
The opposite. Like,
Wiggerdom.
Basically dressing like, yeah, Wiggerdom. People basically dressing like nerds. Like, it was really, I mean, it was definitely implicitly white.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
It was like the stuff white people like.
Yeah, yeah.
Style.
It, yeah, no,
I think that's a little more, you know, something like that.
I think that there were like strands of, you know, this will sound like super like Richard Spencer or whatever, but like there were kind of like last stands of like implicit white identity in the like last decade. And, like, hipsterdom, swippledom was, like, the last attempt for, like, normal middle-class white people to have, like, some kind of culture.
Also, I think it was the last generation where there was a demographic, like, white majority among the youth. Like, in another decade or so, the majority of people, say, who are, like, at 20 are going to be majority non-white, so that's interesting to point out. Like, as the demographics change, that's going to affect these youth subcultures.
Yeah,
yeah. There's also that kind of brings in a little bit to what, since the like the hipsters like that I remember, like they were less political, or if they were, they were more like about environmentalism, you know, animal rights and that kind of, you know, veganism. Whereas in recent years, like, the culture's been almost becoming exclusively, like, anti-white and, like, this, like, total, full-on social justice, you know, the, you know, transphobia, like, you know, binary and all of that stuff. So it makes sense that as the mainstream kind of culture is, like, is so much more, more ghetto now and more, like, anti-white that the, that they're less like opposed to it, and they're less critical of people like Beyonce and these pop stars because that they're pushing that that narrative that coincides with it. Like in the 90s, like I was really into zines and like you know, zine culture, and when I recently like looked into it, the zine culture now is like it's all just totally dedicated to social justice. Like it's basically like like Jezebel, like a DIY version of Jezebel. Whereas like in the 90s, remember you had like Jim Goad, and like zines were very like edgy and like really offensive, and they had all different kinds.
Like,
now it's like it's almost
like roller derby, like Lisa Carver's zine. Like I have, it's more like a magazine. I have some copies of it here, and it's so good. You know, and it goes into like feminist territory, but it also goes into like, you know, she has an article on like David Irving in one of these issues. You know, it's like people were taking risks. They were, you know, poking at sacred cows, and now it's almost, you know, it's a total hegemony. It's you know, it's really shitty what's happening.
I made a feminist thing in like maybe 5 years ago, but it was like anti-Islam feminism because I didn't really know that wasn't like a part of it. I just assumed that it was. I had a drawing of like a woman in like a burqa, and it was like, this is like oppressive or whatever. And then, because like, I don't know if you guys know this, but when I was into feminism, I didn't realize that like feminists did it. You know, I didn't realize that like third wave feminism happened, I guess. And once I found out that they were like pro Islam and pro, you know, super pro minority and blah, 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 even though minorities are really violent towards women, I was like, okay, see you guys.
Oh, yeah, we're like the double standards. Kind of like
intersectional feminism. You're talking about intersectional feminism. That's where it's basically, the theory is like all of these different, you know, bigotry against Muslims and gays and, and the patriarchy and all this stuff. It's like all of these things intersect against like the oppressive white male majority.
It's all the way
and
to,
like,
yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, when I heard that, I was like, but hey, like, I feel like whenever someone's, like, harassing me on the street, it's, like, always a black guy.
Yeah, that's
like, I admitted that.
It's like the video that a feminist made in New York about the catcalling.
Yeah, exactly. And I never denied that. I just didn't realize.
Yeah, you were just being real. You were just, like, I mean, I think, like, feminism as, you know, as an idea that's meant to be, like, you know, making sure women aren't harassed. Is part of feminism, right? Like, wouldn't you go after like the harassment, like, you know what I mean? It's like, once I looked at rape statistics, my views on feminism greatly like changed, you know, because it was like, you know, there's this whole like campus rape thing, and then once I saw like what the rape statistics like by race are, like the FBI stopped doing it by race, but in I think 2010 they have it by race, and like when I saw that, I was like, I've just been fed bullshit for the past like 3 years, you know.
Right, but I always kind of knew that, you know. Just
yeah, it's
a
obvious.
Woman and, like,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, black guys hit on me way more.
Yeah.
Or like harass me more.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I thought everyone knew that, and it was interesting actually. Like, I was talking to this guy, and I was complaining about it. This is, like, pre-red pill, pre-everything. But I was complaining about, you know, guys harassing me on the street. And he's like, but who is it that's harassing you? And I was like, oh, black guys, right? And then this other girl was like, no, but it's everyone. And I was like, it's really not, though. And then she was just like, hee-hee. But,
so, like, they have to make it apply. They have to make it up, like,
right.
If something is about, if blacks do something, that means that it must not only be blacks that do it. That's, like, that's how liberals think. Like, if white people do something bad,
right.
Then, like, that's a bad thing white people do. But if black people do something bad, then, like, everybody must do that bad thing.
Or they say that it's because of that they are historically oppressed, that they grow up in
internalized racism
that lends itself for them to act that way because of of oppression. Like, the, you know what I mean? Like, they never, whenever they bring that stuff up, it's always like, okay, well, what about all of these other countries in the world that are black that do the exact same thing that, like, you know, that.
Colonialism.
Have never been
colonialism.
In like the last 200 years.
Rabbit.
Yeah, but,
colonialism.
Mean, like,
hello.
Sure, but like Vietnam. Vietnam was a colonial country that was like ravaged by war, and they have like almost no crime. And like Japan got nuked in World War II, like completely annihilated, and they became like a world economic power within like 30 years. So some of these like African or like Central American, countries that like haven't had colonialism for like 100 or 200 years are like actually like worse off than they were like in like the early 1800s. Like, you know, it just doesn't hold up.
Rabbit, you were kind of touching upon how like the original hipster culture came about as kind of a it was kind of implicitly had this implicit whiteness, but there's also the kind of interest in things like environmentalism, opposed to like kind of stuff like a lowbrow consumerism, like fast food and supporting small businesses. Do you see any similarities between that and like your interest in this whole kind of concept called the alt-left?
I do actually, because it kind of reminds me of, you know, like the type of scene and like culture that I grew up being involved in and whatnot. It really was like, for the most part, an expression of white identity. They don't really know it, you know, but it's like all of that weird, like experimental noise and music and all that kind of,
yeah, we talked about that on the Retrofuturism show, that like a lot of noise music and like drone techno, that kind of stuff's like implicitly white. And like, Truth, did you see that like when you were playing punk music? Was it like an implicitly white thing?
It was also sometimes explicitly white.
Really?
Like, I remember like people saying like, okay, like Minor Threat or something.
Oh yeah.
You know, they have a song, Guilty for Being White.
Yeah.
And then, or Guilty of Being White. Like, I thought that was pretty explicit. And then I had like conversations with people where they're like, yeah, like Black Flag, like they wanted to make it as white as possible, like with no jazz influence. So I like, there was this weird moment when things were like explicit, and then all of a sudden I felt like it changed, and then people got all like race cucked.
Yeah.
I couldn't say my point anymore.
Did you have friends that were like into like Death in June and black metal?
Yeah, I did.
And the weird thing is, I felt like when I was younger, I sort of assumed that there were kind of like, I mean, I had some kids in my even middle school that were like kind of like 4chan-ish, 1488-ish. Like, I just had people like, and that's the weird thing I think a lot of people don't understand who aren't like in like, I don't know, certain areas. Like, these people aren't new. These people have always been around, like on like people with weird fringe ideas and like, I think, but I just think what happened was the culture changed. And like my friend, who was like the most insane 4chan, like believed in Norse mythology, all this stuff, is now transgender.
Mm-hmm.
Is now transgender.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like there was a weird thing where like people were explicit, like you're saying, and then they kind of changed really quickly.
It was a few people, and then I felt like, I don't want to sound like a woman hater or anything, but like, I felt like when the more women that came into the music scene, the more like SJW, like police it became. I'm not saying like, I'm also like women in music.
Sure, yeah.
And whatnot, but it felt like they were the people that were pushing that. Like this really like...
Oh, but were these girls... But the girls all, like, you know, it's like certain girls can kind of get in these kind of scenes, like certain girls can kind of get along with the guy stuff and go with it and sort of be one of the guys. And that's like, I'm not like a gender discriminating person. Like if a girl can like get along with the guys, she can come and hang out. But it's sort of like, you know, this weird sort of like the guys are going to kind of like turn into the bonobo ape and like go along with like being more, I don't want to sound like a MRA or something, but being more beta, you know, like, it's just weird. It's just, I don't mean to say it like that, but it's like, I just noticed this wimp nature taking over, and then the sort of a weaponizing of the wimpiness. You know what I mean by that? It's like going just gossip 24/7.
Yeah, there was like a police going on, and it was like, there was a lot of like hating on like hardcore dudes and like masculinity and like these things, and there was a lot of like rape accusations and all of this stuff. I mean, this was very specific to like me, you know, where I live and everything.
But it's the same thing. When you're saying this, I saw the same thing, like hating on the hardcore guys, who like had their masculinity stuff, and these guys would have their opinions on women and would be seen in a kind of negative light over time. And then like just rape accusations like up the wazoo, you know, and like publicly giving rape accusations like, you know, like Billy Callahan raped this, like, my friend. And like, it's not even true, you know, but like a huge paragraph on Facebook with like 67 likes. This dude's life is fucking ruined.
Yes. But it was the exact same thing that I saw happening. And it was all like on social media. And it was all like such a turnoff that I was just like, peace out, guys. I like don't want anything to do with this anymore.
What was the thing that made you peace out? Like, did you have an instance? Did you have some kind of event that just like did it for you?
No, it was just all of that stuff combined. Like, once I saw what these people were really like and what they believed, I was just like, we don't have anything in common.
Yeah.
I am the polar opposite of you, and I, you know, don't agree with anything you're saying. And like, you know, I had my few friends, like, that would, or a part of it that, like, agreed with me, but for the most part, it was, like, I would, like, post something on Facebook, like, something really, like, tame.
Yeah.
And then people would be, like, you're joking, right? And, like, no, I'm not joking. Or, like, people would be, like, really hostile. And it was just, like, I don't really want to be a part of this.
What are the demographics in the area you live in?
What is the demographic?
Yeah, because I think in a way, like, for me, I've seen some people react negatively against me, but I've seen a lot of people sort of support me or behind the scenes, like, send me a message and say, like, hey, I agree with everything you say, I just don't want to say it publicly. What was that?
I've had that, too. I've had people privately message me and say that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But not...
Because I just think for me, yeah.
People, you know, not doing it, and I'm just like, oh, I don't know. I think it was the Black Lives Matter thing that really was like.
Oh, okay.
Something like that actually reminds me of something. You know how people will message you privately after you post something, and then they're like, you know, I actually agree with you on a lot of this stuff, but I just don't want to say it or whatever. And that actually happens to me, like, all the time since I started, like, this pro-white leftism stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I get, like, people from the alt-right are always messaging me being like, oh, you know, man, I really love your stuff. Like, it's great. Like, I don't think you should get rid of this site. Whereas, like, publicly people are like, you know, oh, what is this degenerate bullshit, you know, or whatever. Like, but that kind of brings back to what you asked me, though, before, is it's like... people just assume that if you're like into race realism or something, or like white identity, that you're automatically associated with all of this, like this Southern culture or like neo-Confederate, all this other stuff. And it's like, I'm not from the South. Like, I'm not part of that culture. Like, just because I'm like a race realist, that doesn't mean that like,
are you an Anglo?
Interesting about that is even within these like dissident subcultures, people still feel this need to conform into the values and norms of those cultures.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, and if you look at like, I don't know why people in America have this assumption, because if you look at like, you know, Spain or France or Italy or these other England, like they're like white countries, but they all have these, they each have their own distinct like culture. So why would like, you know, a race realist that lives in like Vermont or Oregon or, you know, Southern California or something, like, why do these people just assume that like, I'm basically like any old, like, you know, Christian from Georgia or something like that. Like misperception. You know?
You're in Arizona, like, is there a strong Southern influence? Because I know, like, if you watch the Westerns, they take place in Arizona, but everyone has a Southern accent.
Southern means Scots-Irish, though. Like, you have to make that distinction. You know, like, there's always a slagging that Anglos put on Scots-Irish people. And I don't want to get into, like, white infighting. But it's just, like, you know, it's like... I just kind of feel like a lot of northern people are more like Anglo, and people that were in the south are more Scots-Irish, and that's, you know, there's, but that's sort of gone by the wayside because whites have been slowly moved into like one group, which is, but Rabbit, that's like, I agree, I like what you're saying though, because it's like, why, because you have a racial consciousness, because you have a white identity, why do you have to be seen as like a Confederate? But like, my whole thing is like, why can't all white identity just be kind of consumed into like one thing? You know, I think that that might be, and then there's, you can have things within that, you know, like, even though you're not a Confederate, that's still sort of part of what you are. Because it's like you're part of like the whole hegemony of like whiteness, like, you know what I mean? Like you're part of the whole thing.
That's the problem though, is because like I'm perfectly willing to accept those people as part of like an overall like, you know, white alliance or something like that. But they don't want it. Like they want all of this other baggage, and that's what they want. And as far as like, you know, Arizona doesn't really have a Southern influence. Maybe like, I mean, I live in Phoenix, so maybe if you go out like, you know, 50 or 100 miles, you might find like some more like old kind of like Southwestern-y kind of vibe or something. But I actually wasn't even like born here. Like I lived in Milwaukee when I was a kid, and then like I lived here and I lived in Los Angeles, but I never, Phoenix isn't really, there's really no, it's more Western than, it's probably more like Los Angeles or like Orange County than it is. I would say like something like a place like Texas has much more Southern influence. Like even when I go to like Austin or Dallas, like I feel like, oh man, like this is totally Southern, you know, and that's not even that Southern.
You're like H.L. Mencken, Rabbit.
Oh, are you getting at the theme that we talked about with Keith Preston about that kind of aristocratic and individualism?
Yeah, but even H.L. Mencken's opinions like go along with Rabbit, the kind of like anti-Southern, but also, you know, anti-cosmopolitan and shit. Yeah, and being a leftist too, and having these opinions—that's also like Mencken. That's cool.
Sometimes I think you are just a contrarian.
Who's that, Rabbit?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I am, but like when, if I go to, like, I mean, I've been to Arlington, Texas before, and when I was there, like, you know, let me just put it this way, like, that's not the kind of culture that I want to live in, you know. So that's, I remember when I went to Arlington, right? I like stayed in a hotel, and the hotel had like three or four like Christian channels, and like one of them had a show on. And this was like an actual like show about like partial birth abortion, and it was called Almost Born. And it was like, it had this weird intro with like these like kids like sliding down a slide on a playground, and then like one by one they just start disappearing, and then it says Almost Born.
That
like,
sounds then fucking that sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah, and
so, do you guys know Stephen Anderson, the Baptist?
In a place like Seattle than I ever would like in Arlington, Texas. So I'm not really anti-Southern. It's just that, you know, the stuff that like, that they're really into, that's part of their culture. Yeah. That they're trying to preserve a kind of culture that is like, that I'm not interested in them, but I'm happy to ally with them. Like just as far as like, we're all attacked for being white people. So we can all ally as far as that goes, and then we can go off and form our own little.
But Rabbit,
later,
Rabbit. I think do you know like Stephen Anderson, the Baptist preacher? Do you know him?
No.
I think he says things you would agree with, like this one. Like he's like, if you hear this,
you know, this week this filthy sodomite picture is everywhere, and people are showing this transvestite. Or transgender, or whatever this guy is. You know what I'm talking about? This athlete, or whoever he is. I don't know who it is. I'd never even heard of him before this week. Bruce Jenner has basically mutilated his body, apparently. And you know what? He's being praised by our president. Our President Obama is praising him for, or praising her. We don't even know what it is.
See, don't you agree with that?
Oh, that's funny. That guy actually sounds—he sounds like Eddie Deason, like the actor from the '80s. If you knew who he was, but yeah, I mean, I do think that some of like the like degeneracy and like you know, all of like the furries and all this freaky shit, like some of it has gone too far. But like I said, a lot of these like social conservatives, like I've seen people get upset on Twitter, like with a girl posting like a bikini photo or something like that, or like
even
that. It's just totally like they're so fucking crude. Like it's just like, you know, just because like I think that these fucking like, you know, Vine marathons or whatever with all these teenagers wearing diapers and shit, like, yeah, that's freaky, whatever, but I don't really care like if a girl's wearing a fucking short skirt and we go to a party or something and you know, people make out, like Jesus Christ.
You go to parties where people make out?
Well, not
yeah,
now.
I gotta go to those parties.
I have a girlfriend that lives with me, so I don't really do that kind of stuff that much. Like,
oh, why
it's,
not?
It's funny because
you're not a true player.
As like as degenerate as like I signal, like I actually have like a pretty like
oh my god,
you know,
you're not
pretty
that
normal like girlfriend are life.
Oh, but come on, you definitely had a period of like degeneracy though. You've done ecstasy.
I mean, I've done a lot of creepy shit, but like, you know, nothing that would have gotten me featured in like a common filth like Tumblrista, you know, video.
Oh.
I've
done weird shit. I just play that video as I get a weird visceral reaction from like hearing like crazy Baptist people like that though. Like the same way I get from like reading Jim Goad or something. Like I really like people
Do you know what ASMR is?
Who's that? Oh, ASMR. Yeah, yeah.
I just learned about it like a couple days ago.
Yeah, have you been like listening to it?
That's the feeling you get when you read Jim Goad articles.
Yeah, 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 exactly. It's sort of like, you know, I'm getting, like, the dopamine release, and I feel really good, and it's, like, a visceral feeling. Like, I always used to, like, love watching Fox News, like, in college, even though I, you know, never really agreed with, like, them. I just liked hearing people say things that, like, offended the people around me. Like, I remember when Elliot Rodger shot those people in Santa Barbara, you know, I watched his videos for like a month and like sat there like laughing my ass off. I'm sorry. I just have a very crude sense of humor. And I honestly think that's like how I ended up on this podcast, you know, through the years. Just like thinking that the most terrible things are funny.
It's funny you mention that because Pepe kind of originated with the whole sort of like Elliot Rodger scene and
my
how
friend,
he's like the icon of the alt-right.
My friend who became transgender years ago when he wasn't like this, he would always come up to me like, dude, what? He's like, what? Oh, Pepe, what? He's like, oh, I just got some rare Pepes. Want to see him? What? And like, he literally sounded like that. I should, like, unearth his old identity and, like, make him an alt-right, make him, like, an alt-right figure so he has to become alt-right again. You know, like, reel him back in.
The origin of Pepe was when, who was that, Chris Harper Mercer posted on 4chan.
Well, no,
Matt. Sam Hyde was, like, framed.
Well, no, Matt Fury, I mean, Pepe has been around since, you know, 2006.
I know, but that's how it kind of became, controversial.
No, I mean, if you're on Facebook and you're a fan of pages like Kevin Three and other memester pages, you'll see that Pepe and other memes, like the Death Grips guy, you know, or the Macintosh Plus symbols, like they've been shared for several years now. Pepe's an older meme. And there was the danger of mainstreaming Pepe. There was a danger in it becoming mainstream. And so the people who were the most subversive had to take him as their symbol. And they did it. They did it. Hillary Clinton, you know, has a Pepe page on her campaign site. So
did
they did
it. Vaporwave kind of come out of the hipster scene, or was it just sort of a more just a general internet meme?
Well, I mean, I think that people that are more subversive hipsters kind of went to the internet. I mean, truth will live. Do you agree with that? That, like, the more subversive hipsters, like, just ended up on Twitter? Like, the ones that couldn't do it in IRL anymore?
Yeah, I think Vaporwave was, like, this thing that people wanted to do because they had run out of other things to do. Or, like, punk kids that were, like, rocket over and dead. Like, why was I doing that? They had to, like, invent this new thing so they could feel like they were being really original. Something like that.
So, like, when you saw this, like, when did this, like, because, I mean, I've played in, like, in bands. I think Rabbit, have you played in rock bands, Rabbit?
Yeah, I was in, like, a punk band when I was younger.
So it's like
a couple of other bands.
Yeah, so we all play this, like, archaic form of, like, or have played this, like, archaic form of, like, implicitly white music. And, like, was there a time for, like, both of you guys where, like, you just knew that that thing was over? Where, like, you know, the, like, implicitly white music thing was done? Like, the rock thing?
I think it was done by the time I started doing it.
Oh, okay.
But I just didn't really know. I feel like I didn't know what else to do. Like, it was something that I could do. But I always, like, had in the back of my mind, I was like, wasn't this, like, you know, really innovative in, like, 1988?
Like, yeah. I mean, we had a guy on our show, this guy Ray Sawhill, who's, like, a journalist, and he was involved in the punk scene in the early 80s, and he was like, you know, when we were doing this stuff at CBGB's, like, we thought that we were, like, the end of rock music. Like, we thought we were killing popular culture, that we were killing the society, the spectacle, and we would have, you know, Star Wars and all these things were, like, the huge fireworks finale of it, and then we'd go back to living life. But we've just been in, like, the dirge. We've been in, like, the, I guess, like, the desert of the real for the last, you know, 30 years. And I think we're getting out of it now. I think we're getting out of it now.
Everyone was wearing a t-shirt from a band that was, like, 20 years ago. And it was like, really? Like, can't we, like, you know, be better than that? I don't know. But I was participating in it, too.
That reminds me, you know, in the, like, the early 2000s, I remember in Phoenix anyways, like, there were tons of, like, these, like, hipster kind of DJ nights. And, like, over the years, like, around, like, 2007, 2008, 2009, they became, like more and more, like, ghetto over time. Like, the DJs and the music or whatever, they started, like, merging. They started having them at more of, like, these ghetto clubs, like merging, and the demographics of the people that showed up were becoming completely different from, like, the ones that I went to in, like, 2002 or whatever. That would have been just, like, kind of like Britpop night or something like that. And then by, like, 2009, it would be, you know, it would be like dubstep and all this other stuff, but it would be just filled with, like Mexicans and, like, all this kind of mystery meat. Like, it was just, like, I stopped going because it was totally alien. Like,
you know what's, like I was obsessed with, like, Britpop in high school, and, you know, I still love listening to those bands and stuff like that, and I really like that, like, aesthetic, too. And I noticed
that... You're talking about from the
60s. No, from the 90s. like Jarvis Cocker. And like, you know, even, like, Oasis.
And like Pulp. And,
yeah, Pulp, exactly. Jarvis Cocker's from Pulp. And, like, I don't know. I actually think that, like, me being really into that, and then also, no, like, the people who I know who are, like, more towards the way that we think, like, had a Britpop phase. I feel like Britpop is, like, a nice implicit white identity thing. Almost explicit, actually.
Oh, we talked about that on our retrofuturism show, how, like, the 90s Britpop was influenced by, like, the 60s sound.
But it was, like, nationalistic. I mean, like, Morrissey has, like, that song National Front Disco, where he's like, England for the English.
Yeah, and there was, like, there was that period in the 90s where there was, like, a mod revival, you know, and you even saw some of that in the mainstream a little bit with, like, Austin Powers.
Yeah, totally.
That kind of culture. But if you can look at a lot of, like, 90s indie bands, and they will have, like, copied a 60s like mod aesthetic.
Even like the more kind of generic like a 90s of pop music is even influenced by that.
Oh, yeah. Right, like stuff like Phantom Planet, like old like Phantom Planet and that kind of genre. You definitely see that.
But if you, yeah.
What do you think about like the new retro wave that was influenced by the 80s that was popular? Well,
We talked about that in the retro futurism podcast. You know, like the bands that did the Drive soundtrack and whatnot. But I was gonna say that. You know, what happened in the 90s, it seemed like pop music got progressively dumber as the years went on, you know? Like, if you take the chord progressions of, like, Third Eye Blind songs, you know, it's just, like, the dumbest shit that, like, if you just learn how to play guitar, like, you can learn how to play Third Eye Blind songs. Like, Third Eye Blind is, like, music for people who, like, I mean, those songs are just, like, so... I mean, I kind of like them, actually. But it's just, like, it's so stupid that it's good. And that's what most of that stuff... Like, Better Than Ezra, like, that band is, like... These bands are so stupid. Like, New Radicals is a great group, actually. But most of these, like, 90s American bands are, like... They're so dumb, and just, like, their music is stupid. Like, GDC, every single song. And it's, like, I don't know. It's, like, there was, like, some kind of decline, or, like, in a conspiratorial sense, it was, like, a dumbing down of, like, the mass culture.
As interesting as you have these people who come out of that scene, like, both a Jim Goad and a Gavin McInnes came out of a hipster scene. And also, another point, I think, Alex, you pointed out earlier that a Tacky Theodocropoulos from a Tacky Mag, he's kind of a controversial and kind of like a beat, almost like a hipster fascist, quote-unquote. But he's also was friends with, like, Joan Rivers.
What? I thought he was, like, a aristocrat.
He is. Did you know he was friends with, like, Joan Rivers?
That's strange. I know he has, like, a private island.
Yeah, there's some pictures of him online at, like, really, really, like, rich people events, and he's sitting with Joan Rivers. It's, like, at the same table. It's hilarious. And I know he was friends with, like, Oscar De La Renta.
He actually wrote an article about going to a cocktail party and sitting down with Melania Trump, then having a conversation about, like, the war in Yugoslavia and agreeing about it, and then, like, offending, like, this journalist there.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean...
I think that there's probably, like, you know, there's a point where, like, class trumps, like, ideology... You know, whereas wealthy enough and have enough of status, then it's like, you know, you're still part of the them, really, rather than the us or whatever. It doesn't really. At a certain point, you kind of like, you know, you're one of the. You actually even see that not just with wealthy people, but with anyone famous. I mean, you notice how even like people like Charles Manson. You know, like Andy Warhol pointed out that even like these serial killers and whatnot, like they're even still kind of considered up there, like as like these high status pop stars or whatever. Even though, you know, another one like the Unabomber, like Ted Kaczynski, like he's still
relevant. People know who he is.
He has the elevated status.
I
don't think at a certain point it doesn't even matter like what you do or what you're wealthy for or famous for, like, once you're just, like, up there, you're kind of just in the mix.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like the thing is, like, when I've been more open about having dissident opinions, a lot of people that I hang out with, like, are wealthier. Like people that, like, have money, like, they like, I don't know, maybe they're, like, bored or something and they want to hang... I'm being, like, so honest. They might like having, like, friends that are a little crazier, like, on the edge. Like, they can afford to, like, have friends that are weird. And, like, they want weird, exciting things in their life. And, like, people that are, like, poor. Like, Keith Preston always says to me and Robert that political correctness is just like a religion. And I feel like it's a way for, like, middle class and poor white people to, like, signal that they're, like, cool and hip and cosmopolitan. And, like, I'm up with, like, Black Lives Matter.
It's for people who are striving or trying to, like, be upper middle class, but they're not, really.
Oh, what do you mean?
I feel like signaling, like, being, you know,
PC?
What is it? PC. It's, like, for people who are striving.
It's like they're trying to get forward in their lives.
They're kind of out of touch in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. It's, like, people that, like, almost... I mean, a weird thing is, like if you're someone who's, like, a hipster or, like, down with trends, like, you sort of are, like, with the zeitgeist. Like, you know what's, like, when things are changing. And then, like, you look around and you see people that are, like, just getting into stuff that you got over a year ago, you know?
You want to be one step ahead.
Exactly. And I feel like, you know, with a lot of this PC stuff, like, I'm seeing people who were like, apolitical 3 years ago, like, now just get into, like, becoming, like, PC people. And I'm like, I got over this, like, years ago.
Well, and it's also, though, like, you notice that they always want to be, like, one step ahead, even as far as, like, you know, knowing, like, the right pronouns and gender to use and whatnot. Like, you know, oh, what, like, you don't know what sapiosexual is? Like, I mean, you know, come on, like, get with it. Like, I can't believe, you know, you got to learn about, you know, pansexuality and non-binary teens and all this kind of stuff. It's like they use it as a signal as, like, almost like how they're kind of, like, educated about all this stuff that's kind of bullshit. That's almost reminds me of, like, knowing a lot about some kind of weird, like, indie music scene or something that doesn't really even fucking matter and that no one gives a shit about, and it's all, like, bullshit knowledge, but, like, knowing it is important to the kind of scene
it's like the striving. It's the striving, and it's a way to, like, status signal. And I think that but the weird thing is, and almost to, like, be critical of us, it's like being, you know, dissident right or alt-right or whatever we are, you know, it's like being like us is almost like another way of signaling, like, I don't give a fuck, you know, like.
Yeah, exactly. And people think you're doing it just to be edgy or just to be, you know, hipster or whatever.
Yeah.
Because they think that you're trying to be different.
Yeah.
They don't think you actually, like, mean what you said. I've gotten that accusation a lot.
Do you see a lot of hipster types, like, joining movements like the alt-right just for the sake of being edgy?
I don't know about that, but I feel like a lot of the alt-right is hipster types. Like, the guy from TRS has, like, a huge beard, and you guys all, what about all you guys, you know? I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't know what everyone looks like, but, like, what about Richard Spencer?
Yeah, Richard, like, it's so funny because, like, I would, like, never call myself a hipster, but, like, people would just call me a hipster. But, like, once I became involved in, like, you know, like, white identity politics, like, I kind of, like, was like, okay, yeah, I'm a hipster, you know, because I'm not, like, because it's, like, when you're, like, within the confines with, like, other members of your own group, you sort of have to identify yourself by, like, your social standing rather than, like, your, you know, like, yeah, I'm a fucking white guy. You know, like, it's, you know, everyone's just in that. So, like, I'm a hipster guy.
That brings up, you know, something, like, I think we talked about this before on maybe another show, and that is that, like, people are subjected to so much propaganda and all of this, like, you know, media marketing, you know, not just for race stuff, but really, like, everything, even, like, you know, products and, like, sports ball and all of that stuff. And so to get into this movement, like, at all, like, you've really got to be, like, a resistant nonconformist to have all of those forces coming at you and still think this stuff and be like, no, like, I actually really think, like, I know what's going on here, and I'm right about this. The problem is that when you have all these nonconformists, like, you know, it makes sense that you have all this infighting, because nobody, even these people, are natural nonconformists, so they don't even want to conform to to the dissident group orthodoxy, which kind of emerges. And that is, so you have all of these people that are just like, it's difficult to get any kind of cohesion because these people are already, by default, huge nonconformists
I think that's a really great point. But I also think that all of us exist under an umbrella, and then like within that umbrella, there's like pockets, and like the four of us are probably in a pocket with like some other people. You know, like we're not the same as like, you know, the dudes from like Fash the Nation or like Chris Cantwell or something. You know, like I'm sure if I hung out with Chris Cantwell, like maybe we would lift weights together. But I don't
know. Right, I think I actually got blocked, I think, by that dude, Kurt Doolittle, because he was like, he had made this, like, this sheet or whatever, where he's just like, him and this other, like, neo-reaction guy just kind of, like, made up this hierarchy of the alt-right or something, and he made himself, like, at, like...
Oh, he's the king!
Chief educator philosopher or something, and yeah. I was like... Dude, what are you talking about? First off, you're like some weird like proprietarian thing. Like, you know, we're not all about libertarianism. But the point is that he made up this sheet, and like he made himself like chief like educator philosopher, and a bunch of us were like, no, dude, like what are you fucking doing? Like, you know, we didn't just decide that this was like, you know, this was, you don't have enough influence or anything to be able to be a person who just decides like, okay, these are the people who are, and he completely left people off the sheet, like Greg Johnson and Richard Spencer.
I know,
all of these people.
I do know that.
It's just a joke.
What do you think about those, like, traditionalist memes that show, like, a traditional, like, aesthetics, like, architecture, like a cathedral or a village, next to something like, say, a brutalism?
I like all of that stuff. I mean, I love, like, cathedrals. I know Rabbit doesn't like it, but...
Yeah, well, we always joke that you have like this weird fetish for Catholicism, and it's kind of funny because I was actually like raised Catholic, like not really seriously, but like I went to Catholic school or whatever, and like I just like have no use for any of that stuff. Like I love like, you know, Planet of the Apes, like, you know, future stuff, like Logan's Run. Like I don't have any, you know, I probably spent thousands of hours in school, like in those churches or whatever, and like I never had, it never had any.
Wait, but
to me at all.
But Truth Will Live, like, have you ever read like Andy Nowicki's writing on Catholicism?
I don't think so. No.
Oh, like I don't know because like I feel like you and me are like we're sort of similar, but we kind of come from different backgrounds because like my mother's Catholic. And, but I know, like, we both are, like, sort of similar and have interest in Catholicism. And, for me, it's kind of like, I don't know, I feel like I'm sort of, like, I'm not anti-sex, but I feel like sex is, like, a kind of, like, corruptive act. And, like, I remember watching one of your videos where you talked about, like, women, like, waiting to, be married to have sex. Like, that's not something I really give a shit about, really, but, like, I think that, like, the fact that, like, we don't even consider that at all is an interesting thing, and I know you've, like, talked about that in your videos.
Yeah, I just think that, like, we, like, reduce sex to, like, this meaningless thing. It's, like, it's not sacred.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's, like, neo-reaction 101 or whatever, but, like, I do, like, agree with that. I mean, it's just, like, this, you know, it's lost, like, its true significance, I think, in a lot of ways.
And it's, I mean, I remember, like Lars von Trier, he made, like, a porn company in the 90s, because he said that every porn movie he watched was just, like, two pieces of meat hitting each other. These close-ups of two pieces of meat.
It's just porn, like, films. Are they like actual like art films, or not just generic?
I've never seen them. I've never seen them. I mean, I like things. I hate porn, but I like things like in the realm of the senses, and I'm sure it's in that tasteful variety.
Yeah, I like all of the art porn too.
Me too. Yeah.
I feel like I look at people dancing, like, in that, hip-hop style or whatnot.
Yeah, with their ass grinding.
Like twerking. And I'm just like, you look like you're doing, like, an African tribal dance, and that reminds me of, like, basically, I don't know, like, being an animal. And I feel like people are, like, reducing themselves to this, like, super primitive, animalistic state, and I just want to, like, transcend it and be civilized. So I feel like if you're super civilized, you can't just be, like, fucking everything in sight or dancing like that.
Beneath
you, I don't know.
I mean, it's just so weird, like, this kind of dancing where these girls will, like, rub their ass on you, and it's like, you get a boner, and it's like, am I supposed to just, like, rub my cock on you, like, when I'm dancing with you? I just don't get it. I don't get it.
It's really, like, animalistic.
It is.
That's the way I see it.
It is. I mean, it's very strange. I mean, there's this whole idea where it's like, I feel like people would, like, listen to us talking and be like, oh, la-di-da, four privileged white people going on, complaining, talking about how hard it is to be white. And then it's like, oh, the privileged white people, you guys are caught up in your gender roles trying to be all... Rabbit, he doesn't think he's traditional, but let me tell you, he's patriarchal, and he's traditional, because he thinks women should listen to him. You know what I mean? It's like, these people, like, it's like their, like, culture of critique of us, like, never ends. And, like, we can never win. And their whole thing is, like, we'd have to totally destroy our identity, because our identity itself is oppressive, you know? That's really what I think they think.
I just, like, want these things to be, like, discussed.
Yeah, me too.
Because there's really no discussion. It's just like, oh, you're, like, not having sex? Like, what's wrong with you? You must be repressed. There's no, like, actual, like, intellectual discourse about why that could be, like, a positive thing to someone.
Yeah, exactly.
It just doesn't exist.
But it's...
Yeah, I think a big problem with that is that so much of that stuff is explicitly associated and tied with religion. So it needs to be the case needs to be made for those kinds of things outside of
a
supernatural
way.
Context. Yeah, it's outside of a supernatural context. So it's like, you know, it's like you need to argue why having a you know, families and stuff is good for having a cohesive society, not because, like, some supernatural being, communicated it psychically to some being that wrote it down in a book, and this is the way it's got to be. Like, I think you have to make the case of, like, why this is good to have, why this makes a society strong, and, like, what happens psychologically to children to grow up in these various other circumstances,
but if you think about it, it's weird.
Roger Devlin's book about that topic, he comes at it from a purely, like, a secular or even scientific standpoint. He doesn't back his points up from a religious argument.
Yeah, and actually,
what was that truth?
Like Aaron Clary has, like, a really good video about this, and I'm not, like, a really fan of his or anything, but he makes the point that, like, if you look at all the different religions and civilizations, like, they all had very similar a lot of similar rules.
They had, so Aaron Clary and, says they had similar rules, these, like, civilizations.
Yeah, like, because, like, it was like they invented religion as a means to incorporate these things that were good for society, and they just kind of, like, not that they consciously said, like, oh, we're going to make this thing up, but it kind of, like, religion materialized as a way to subconsciously reinforce these norms and things that were, like, good for keeping societies.
Yeah, totally. It's a group evolutionary strategy. I think that's
right.
What religion
like,
is.
Like all over the world, like
totally.
they still valued these things, even though they worshipped, like, completely different gods. And it's almost as if, like, these you know, these religious beliefs are really just a manifestation of like how to keep a society doing these certain things that are good for the colony.
But Truth, were you going to say something about Roger Devlin?
Me?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I feel like neo-reaction, I don't even know if that's, like, still a thing anymore, because I don't really follow it, but...
Yeah, people stopped that using that.
Wait, no, social matter's still around,
they kind of stopped using that, but that was what they were doing. They were, like, explaining in a completely secular way, like, what the purpose of all of those, like, reactionary social institutions were for. And...
Right. It was like that, but then it got kind of, like, got taken over by, like, the traditional Catholic wing. And then now that it's disappeared, like, that's kind of where, like, some of the other people came in that are, like, now trying to, like, reinsert that stuff into the alt-right. Not so much those ideas, but, like, a lot of the other stuff that, like, oh, you need to get rid of this populism and all that. Like,
I feel like they were making the case for traditional Catholicism and whatnot, though, in, like, a secular way. Like, they were trying to, like, sign, what's the word? Like, explain it. I mean, that's what,
right,
that's
but there was always a friction though between like the Nick Land people that like that wanted to kind of almost like make a religion that was based on this kind of secularism, and then but with the knowledge that like you needed some kind of religion, and then of course the people who were like actually the Catholic reactionaries, of course they. That was insulting to them, so they all hate the Land crowd because they genuinely believe in their religion and they're not doing it out of this other utilitarian.
We're at the end of the show. Truth to Live, is there anything else you'd like to add before I wrap things up?
I never got to tell my story.
Do it.
I'll tell it right now.
You could.
So tell your story.
Okay, so... This actually happened to me today. This girl at work was talking to me, and she's kind of likes to like shit talk people, which is like okay sometimes, but she likes to shit talk like everyone. And she was like started shit talking this like really pretty like blonde girl, and was like, yeah, she's like racist. Did you know that? And then she was like, yeah, like she like wouldn't denounce Trump, and she was like saying things about Somalians, and I was like, well, what if I like Trump? And she's like, you don't though. And I was like, well, what if I did? And she didn't believe me.
She didn't believe
like, she's
you?
Like, you? No, she didn't believe me that I like Trump.
Did
like,
you tell her?
Didn't. She thought I was kidding, and that's an experience I've had like. Multiple times, like I'll say something and people will think I'm kidding, or I'll
That happened.
I had that experience when I was at work too. You know, I was like at lunch with my coworker teams, and this girl was like ranting about Trump. She's like, "Okay, before I start, like none of you guys support Trump here, right?" And then I was like, "Yeah, I do." And she started laughing, like you know, like yeah.
You're joking, so yeah.
Okay, like.
Yeah, people think I'm, like, joking about Trump, too. And she was like...
Did you read that Gavin McInnes article where he was walking around with, like, a Trump t-shirt?
Oh, my God, I've done that. I've done that in North Jersey.
I
like, have a Trump hat and a Trump shirt. And, like, but the thing is, around my town, it's, like, all these Italians and Scots-Irish people that have, like, Trump bumper stickers and like signs everywhere. Like everyone supports Trump around here. It's crazy.
I rarely like, see a Trump. I mean, I see it like maybe once a month at Santa Barbara.
Yeah, in North Jersey, it's like weird because like it's all like enclaves. Like it's just
I see like Bernie Sanders and Black Lives Matter signs.
They should still keep up the Bernie like signs. Like there's still hope.
Yeah, they still have them.
That's hilarious. They still keep it up. Like Bernie is like still a thing.
To these people. Really? And you have no idea how many Bernie bumper stickers I see. I've seen a few Trump bumper stickers, but I've never seen a Trump yard sign ever.
Oh wow! Like
I think if you had one, It would get like torn down.
It's crazy. Everyone supports Trump around me. Like, I was at the bar, and I was, like, really drunk, and I was talking about, like, crazy, like, anarchist shit, and I was just, like, going nuts. And these girls are like, how could you say that? That's, like, anti-American. And then I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, you don't like this country? And I was like, no, I like this country. And they're like, good, you support Trump? And I was like, yeah, I like Donald Trump. Yeah, I drove to Syracuse. Like, I drove 6 hours to a Trump rally. And they were like, that's fucking awesome. Because we support Trump. And then, like, and then this other girl, like, said to me, she's like, hey, like, Alex, like, do you like Trump? And I was like, I didn't know if she was, like, grilling me or not. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, why are you nervous? Like, we're all white here. Like, so many people, like, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because of, like, that's why I asked about the demographics before. Maybe white people in my area, because Greg Johnson always says this, too. Like, he's like, well, white people in New York, actually, it's what Countercurrents gets the most page views from. Because I think that's where you have the highest percentage of red-pilled white people, because they have to see these things every day. And I'm like, well, it's probably like it is in North Jersey, too. Because, like, so many people, like, they're not on this wavelength. Like, they don't read American Renaissance in V-Day.
That's a good point, like, because Ted Cruz actually won. He won all the states, like, Montana and Wyoming, which you stereotypically think as being ultra-conservative.
But Trump won New York. But Trump won New York.
Places that have, like, almost no diversity, Utah and Montana, Idaho, Alaska.
Exactly. But the diversity, but the places that are enriched with diversity, vote, like, look how much Trump won, you know, look in New York, you know, Trump really, really won in those states that are more cuckish, that are more blue. They didn't go for Jeb Bush, you know, they didn't go for Ted Cruz. They went for Donald Trump.
Marco Rubio here.
Really?
Oh, yeah, he won there.
People here are dumb. I'm starting to think that they are. Anyway, this is the end of the show.
Yeah. So, Truth All to right. Live, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
And also, thanks, Rabbit and Alex.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.